Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Who wouldn't want the amazing abilities of Dr. Doolittle? He could walk with the animals, he could talk with the animals, he could grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals. Well, our next guest doesn't even need to imagine such an eventuality or such powers, because she is the winner of the 2026 Collar Doolittle Prize for two-way interspecies communication. Julie Ellie is Associate Project Scientist in the Department of Neuroscience at University of California, Berkeley. She joins me now. Julie, this is really interesting work. Tell me a little bit about your work decoding birds and what they're trying to say.
Hi, hello. Thank you for inviting me over. My work of trying to understand what they are saying is really fascinating, I have to say. This is something I've been dreaming of for a very long time. When I was already young, I was interested in interacting with animals. And so here we are focusing on a species that is easy to interact with and easy to breed in captivity, the zebrafinch. And we're trying to understand what are the different sounds they're using and what does that mean.
So the zebrafinch is found where and what sort of sounds does it make?
The zebrafinch is originally from Australia, from the outback, so what people call the semi-arid zone. So people I'm French, so coming from France or coming from Ireland, I guess you would clearly call that a desert. There's nothing. It's just a couple of bushes. And the type of sound they make, I can try to imitate a few of them, but like they have, for instance, a distance call that sounds like that. Ah! And the male is also doing one particular vocalization, and that's why the species is famous in scientific environment. The male is doing a song, which is a courtship signal to the female, and it sounds like something like that.
Wow, you're good at this. So the problem a lot of the time when we talk about, you know, the study of animal cognition and the study of animal communication, we really have reduced animals to such a very basic idea that it's almost difficult sometimes for people to conceive of how rich their environments are and how intelligent these animals are. And yet we're constantly told and shown how rich their environments are and how clever they are. So apart from I'm hungry, danger, mating calls, how many different types of calls and functions do we imagine a zebrafinch has based on your research?
So based on observations, I think we can, you know, nail down about a dozen different call types or words in their repertoire. And this dictionary really is obtained by observing their behavior and trying to match sound, a specific sound that they make, with the specific context of production. So they do have, for instance, two alarm calls. So you have broad categories, basically, and within those categories, like more refined specific context. So the two alarm calls, for instance, are produced in slightly different circumstances. One is really addressed to the whole group rather than the other one is addressed just to the partner and to their actual chicks. So the big categories we were talking about, so the pair bonding, vocalizations, those are really, you know, not only courtship, but also maintaining a pair bond with your partner. And then you have also the contact calls. So contact calls are used to really establish contact with another individual, just an acoustic contact. And that could be at long distance, that would be one particular call type, or at short distance, and that's another type of sound that they're producing.
Right. So when you say a contact call, it's basically like a zebrafinch going, hello, hello.
Yeah, it's that plus I'm saying my name. So I'm saying, hello, this is John. And they are expecting that the other birds that are hearing this is going to respond, hey, this is Mary. And because they can localize where the sound is coming from, they know who is where, basically.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. So presumably a bird would just instinctually answer that if it was the same species, because they're not threats to each other, presumably. Because, you know, in chimpanzees, for example, who fight each other, you wouldn't want to be telling people where you were necessarily. So zebrafinches are very happy to tell other zebrafinches where they are and what their name is.
Yeah, zebrafinches are very social. Huh. They live in large flocks, and they also, you know, they are having their own little nest and defending the small territory around their nest, about, 1 meter around the nest, or even less than that. but they are otherwise very social and always interacting with each other. It's also, you know, imagine you are in the desert and you want to find food. If you see a flock of zebra finches somewhere on the ground, you know, that's something you want to know because this is where food is.
Yeah.
So it's slightly different condition, environmental condition that makes species communicate different information.
Right. So these finches in the desert are making these vocalizations, and you wanted to build up a dictionary of calls to understand, but also potentially to communicate with them, right? So how mm-hmm. do you go about doing that? Your work was with finches in captivity. Is that right?
Yeah.
So how do you know what each word means? I mean, because if it's not in the wild environment, isn't it difficult to know when a bird makes a certain sound that it means something? And do all bird sounds mean something? Like, is it possible that some of them just sort of mumble and that sound isn't for a purpose?
Yeah. So, of course, when you are in the field, following birds is a big issue. So you cannot follow the same individual over days or even over hours, right? So being in captivity enables you to do this. That's the first plus of being in captivity. Then in captivity, you want to set up cages where birds are having the same challenges they would find in the wild so that you reproduce the whole set of behaviors they would show naturally in the natural environment. Then when you get to that point, the whole game is spending hours and hours observing the birds, observing what they're doing. So you can do focal observation. Mm. Like every day you're following one individual at a time and you're following everything that the bird is doing. And that each time the bird is doing a sound, taking notes of what was happening at the same time.
Right.
And progressively you will build up that knowledge and those data sets that tells you which sound is associated with which behavior. So, you know, this is very close to what people's experiences when they are at home with pets, with cats or dogs. And when you get to know a dog, you end up, because you hear all the time, you end up understanding what it means when they do this particular sound or this particular other sound. When they bark at the door, they want to get out.
Yeah.
When they do this, like, they want maybe some cuddle. When they start to get yup, yup, yuppy, and they want their dinner, right?
Yeah.
So you progressively build up that knowledge because you're exposed every single day to the same sound in the same context. And that's exactly the same tools that I used as a researcher working with birds.
Talk to me about the sort of experiments, because you did a sort of you trained them to perform certain actions, so then you could kind of throw experiments at them. So you sort of trained them like Pavlov's response to know that a button did a certain thing. Talk to me about your experiments.
So the first step before that experiment was to gather those sounds and for me to get a dictionary. And you can tell, okay, well, you can say, okay, this is your observation of what you think that means. And so I put this to the test by doing this experiment and asked directly the bird. So how do you ask an animal or a bird whether the vocalizations you've been gathered and your understanding of them is correct or not?
Yeah.
What we're using is a design that is meant to do a classification of two sound categories. And it relies on one thing, which is similar to how humans, we are scrolling through videos, for instance, on our phones. You are going through videos and you don't like, and you just scroll, 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 scroll until you stop to something that is interesting, bringing, you know, some interest. And then you stop, you listen to it, you watch it fully, you get your little dopamine because this is like kind of, you enjoy this moment.
Yeah.
And then you scroll back, right? And so we're going exactly in that same system. We're asking the bird to press a button. So this is the part that is an operant, where the animal has to do an action that is not natural. Press a button to hear a vocalization that like trigger a playback. And some of those vocalizations are going to be rewarded at the end of the playback, which is 6 seconds, a very long time for a zebra finch, or nothing happens. And the game for the bird is to identify which vocalizations are rewarded and which one are not in those playbacks that they trigger, and to then quickly go through the ones that are not. So interrupt them and switch to the next one by activating the button again and activating the button again. So scrolling through those, if I may say, those sounds.
Right. But what is actually happening there? The bird is identifying this is a call, or how are they helping you classify what those calls mean? And how does that work?
So I control what calls are rewarded and what calls are not. And I'm saying, okay, on that day, I'm going to put all the call types that corresponds to, for instance, this specific contact call. So I recorded many birds before saying the same word. They say, hey, and then their name.
Right.
And then I recorded the rest of the repertoire.
Right.
All the words in the dictionary. And so I'm asking this specific subject, can you distinguish every time a bird was saying, hey, I am, and then their, you know, their name, compared to every, I'm hungry, there's a danger, you know, I'm scared or whatever. Right?
I see. So you're basically helping them pick out the word that you're hoping to confirm this is what this means. So because you're bunching up like 20 or 40 different calls from birds in that sort of a situation. And if they don't respond to some of them, you know, oh, that was slightly different and that's not what that meant.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's so cool. What a clever idea. Yeah. And so, so the Doolittle Prize is for like two-way species communication. Mm-hmm. Does this count as two-way species communication?
Not yet. We're not yet there. I mean, to some extent, because I was able to ask a question to birds that responded to me, right? Now I was not having a conversation with them. So I think to get to that point, we need them to have the capacity to understand how birds are stringing those words together, right? And what are the rules of when you say this, I need to answer that. So this is something, this dynamic aspect of the exchange is not yet really known. And once we have this, then we can get to the point where we are constructing a little robot or something like that that can interact truly with the birds.
Huh, which would be very cool. So one of the things that you found really interesting was that some of the things you weren't expecting. So the birds were not responding the way you would have expected to some of the words that you assumed meant something. Talk to me about the mistakes, because there's something quite interesting about that.
Yeah, so overall, they're doing very good at this task. But as error is humans, you know, humans are making error. Well, birds are also doing errors. And so we were wondering, well, those errors, what is the drive to them? Why are they doing those errors? And we looked at them, we saw they were kind of systematic, and we saw a pattern into it. And we were wondering, where is that pattern really what we think it is? Because you could think, okay, when I'm asking you that task, let's say I'm asking you with English words to classify glove, love, hurt, and heart. If you were to classify them acoustically, you would probably group together glove and love and heart on the other side.
Yeah, because they sound like each other.
Yeah. But if I ask you to classify them according to some meaning or just, you know, semantic representation, what would you do?
Also love and glove, but that's because I'm weird. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. love and heart. Love and heart.
Right. And then the other one would go somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
But you see, you would not like link the words or here the call types in the same manner. You would not classify them in the same manner.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing for the birds. So when we were looking at their errors, we're wondering, when they're doing those errors, is this just driven by how the vocalization sounds like? Or is it driven by the meaning of those sounds?
Right.
And as I explained to you earlier that they were like, for instance, two different contact calls. Those are calls used to say, hey, I'm Mary. And there's one that is really long distance, which means that it propagates for like very far away. Mm. It's loud. It's has a pretty long duration for a zebrafinch, like about 200 milliseconds. And it has, for the male, a down sweep. So it sounds like, yo! And then they have another one that they use at short distance. And that doesn't, it's not as loud, it's shorter. And it doesn't sound the same way, not the same timbre, not the same temporal modulations. And those are really used for the same idea of like, I'm establishing contact with others.
Right.
And so the close or the further.
So the finch was saying, no, they are the right, they are the same, but they didn't sound the same to you, but they were, had the same similar sort of meaning. Really interesting. Yeah, I can't wait to hear from this robot that's going to talk to these birds. We might get in touch with you when you've built that. Julie Ellie is from University of California, Berkeley. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.